This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello, and welcome to Night Transmission 78. I should warn you, if you're expecting a ration of gore, a flagon of murder, a pint of bitters, well, wait an hour. You will have that then. But the first hour, it's not going to be exactly an hour, but it's going to be pretty close to an hour, is going to be devoted to something a little different. A couple of days ago, I became familiar with the fact that the novel, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, written by Josephine Leslie, under the pseudonym R.A. Dick, is still in print. If you've seen The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, then you know what I'm talking about and why I say it's something different. It's a romantic fantasy. And now, just between you and me, I'm a sucker for romantic fantasies. I mean, I really do enjoy them. Oh, not the Harlequin type of romantic fantasies. Although these are the illegitimate descendants of the works of the Bronte sisters, which I did enjoy. I also actually very much enjoyed the Ron Perlman. And, what was her name? Her last name was Hamilton. You know, the woman who was in the first couple of Terminator movies. Anyway, Linda Hamilton. A few decades ago, they did a program called Beauty and the Beast. If you've ever seen Ron Perlman, if you've seen that program and never seen Ron Perlman out of the Beast makeup, you're in for a surprise. The makeup actually improved his looks. But I shouldn't be like that. He really is a fine actor. I also think that it says something about Perlman's performance that I remember his character's name was Vincent. I have no idea what Hamilton's character's name was. Like I said, I recently became aware of the fact that The Ghost of Mrs. Muir is still in print, and began to recollect fondly on having actually read the book, I don't know when, probably sometime in the 1960s, and having seen the movie, probably sometime in the 1950s. The movie was originally released by 20th Century Fox in 1947, 2 years after the book had been written, and starred Gene Tierney and Rex Harrison. As was usually the case, the book was better, featuring some absolutely fine writing. There's a passage early in the book. It was one of those sunny, boisterous March days, with great white clouds sailing across the blue skies, like gold-rigged galleons, and a wind that blew tiles off the roofs and hats off heads. I don't know, I think that's pretty good writing, don't you? Anyway, this is from Lux Radio Theater. Originally aired on December the 1st of 1947, same year the movie came out. And it stars, well, no point in my telling you who it stars. I'm not going to tell you in just a moment here. If you just can't stand a little sweetness and light, even if there is a ghost in it, feel free to skip down to the third section of the show. It starts at about the one-hour mark. Well, just a little after the one-hour mark. We get some science fiction there. But I warn you, if you do that, you're going to miss something nice. And we'll follow that up with a story from
The Strange Dr. Weird.
That happens at just a little after 90 minutes into the show. Okay, now that those guys are gone, here we go.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Flakes, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Charles Boyer and Madeline Carroll in The Ghost and Mrs. Muir.
Some 50 years ago in London, a young and handsome widow, Lucy Muir, left the home of the mother and sister of her departed husband and boarded a train. With her went her small daughter, Anna, and a servant named Martha.
There, the little one's asleep now, Mum. Maybe now you can tell me where we're going.
You've been very patient with me, Martha. I suppose we are running away.
I can't say I blame you, Mum. Nagging at you morning till night, telling you what you could do and what you couldn't do. Sinful it was, Mum.
That will be enough, Martha.
Yes, Mum.
We're going to a village called Whitecliff. Whitecliff by the sea.
You've taken a house there, Mum?
I've been in touch with a leasing agent, a Mr. Coombs. He has several houses for rent. There must be one we can afford. At least we'll be by ourselves.
Well, good for you, Mum. Good for you.
We should be there soon. We'll stay at the inn till Mr. Coombs finds the house we want.
Yes, Mum.
Oh, Martha, I know I'm doing right. I know.
Say, Mrs. Muir, that you'll find no better home in Whitecliff than Laburnum Mount. It's newly built, it's near the village,
but I can't understand why you won't show me Gull Cottage. The description in your file is most intriguing.
Oh, believe me, madam, Gull Cottage wouldn't suit you at all.
I suppose there's something wrong with it. Is it the drains?
Well, I put up a house for rent, Mrs. Muir. You may be sure there's nothing wrong with the drains.
Then why shouldn't it suit me?
Oh, will you kindly allow me to be the judge of that? Now about
this... But if I'm going to live in the house, I should be the judge, Mr. Coombs. I'm sure there's another agency in Whitecliff. Perhaps they have Gull Cottage listed also.
Very well, Mrs. Muir. Come, I'll show you Gull Cottage. Well, you wanted to see Gull Cottage, and I've shown you Gull Cottage. Now we can leave.
But it's lovely, and so close to the ocean.
And so far from a neighbor.
I can't understand it. Why should a house like this remain empty?
Well, it's been without a tenant for 4 years.
Of course, it's terribly dusty, but...
Mr. Muir?
Who's that in there? There in... Oh, it's a portrait. A portrait on the wall.
Oh, that. Yes, the former owner, Captain Gregg.
The room's so dark, for a moment I thought it was someone real. Well, a sea captain. That explains the scheme of decoration, doesn't it?
Which is all in frightful taste.
Oh, it's a delightful room.
Mrs. Muir, I assure you this house will not suit you at all.
Nevertheless, I shall go upstairs.
Yeah, but there are only 3 rooms upstairs. They're all bedrooms. The main bedroom, it's quite ugly. It's drafty. It's full of... Oh, well, see for yourself, then.
Why, it's charming. And a balcony. A balcony overlooking the sea. But what's this? A telescope.
Captain Gregg, madam. He liked to watch the passing ships.
As I shall too, Mr. Coombs. I suppose you have a reason for disliking this place so intensely. But I could become very fond of it. So... Mr. Coombs.
Maybe now you know my reason. Well, you would come. I didn't want to show it to you, but oh, no, you had to see it.
Haunted. How perfectly fascinating.
Well, 8 times. I've rented it, and 8 times the tenants have left after the very first night.
What a pity, Mr. Coombs. That laughter, that was Captain Gray.
It was indeed.
But why does he haunt? Was he murdered?
Well, he committed suicide.
I wonder why. Mr. Coombs, I've decided to take Gull Cottage.
You what?
It's so ridiculous. Ghosts, apparitions.
Madam, with your own ears. But you heard him yourself.
The wind in the chimney, Mr. Coombs. Please arrange for us to move in tomorrow.
What time is it, Mama?
Way past sleepy time, Anna, darling. No more stories tonight. Now off to sleep with you.
I love it here, Mama. Our own house and our own ocean. Even the rain. rain sounds different than the rain in London.
That's because we're so close to the sea, darling. You're not afraid of the storm, are you?
Why should I be afraid?
Of course. We are snug and warm in our own little harbor. Good night, darling. All tucked in, is she, Mum? She'll be asleep in 2 minutes.
Me too, Mum. Oh, your hot water bottle's downstairs, Mum, on the kitchen table. And the kettle's on the stove.
Thank you, Martha.
My, it's storming out there for fair, ain't it? I don't mind saying it's a bit scary, like.
Martha.
A strange house and all, and not a soul in a mile of us.
Oh, go to sleep, silly. I'll be up in a minute. That's strange. Why should Martha turn out the kitchen light?
You've got it, Kendall. Light it.
What nonsense is this now? Now I'm hearing voices like Mr. Coombs. What's the matter with these matches? It's not the matches, it's... Very well, Captain Gregg. I know you're here. Are you afraid to speak up? Is that all you're good for, to frighten women? Well, I'm not afraid of you.
Light the candle, light it.
Well, how can I when you keep blowing out the matches?
Light the blasted candle.
That's better. Well?
You are Captain Gregg.
Who the devil else would I be?
I'm sorry I called you a coward. I didn't mean to embarrass you.
Embarrass me?
I mean, because of the way you died.
What? The way I died, madam?
Committing suicide.
Who the devil said I committed suicide?
Mr. Coombs said you
did. Coombs is a fool. I went to sleep in front of that confounded gas heater in my bedroom. I'm a restless sleeper. I kicked the gas on with my foot. It was a stormy night, like this. So I shut my windows, as any sensible man would. Well, won't you?
Yes, I suppose so.
Well, the coroner's jury said it was suicide because my blasted charwoman testified I'd always slept with my windows open. How the devil should she know how I slept?
Oh, I'm so glad.
You have a strange sense of humor, madam.
I mean, because you didn't commit suicide. But if you didn't, why do you haunt?
Because I have plans for my house, which do not include a pack of strangers making themselves at home.
I think it's very childish of you, frightening people.
Well, in your case, I'll admit, I charted the course with regret. You're not a bad-looking woman, you know, especially when you're asleep.
So you were in my room this afternoon while I was napping.
My room, madam.
And I thought I dreamed it all, but I knew I'd closed the window, and when I awoke, I found it open.
I opened the window because I didn't want another accident with a blasted gas.
I'm quite capable of taking care of myself.
Good. Then you will pack your gear and shove off tomorrow, preferably the first thing in the morning.
I will not go. The house suits me perfectly.
It's my house, madam. And I intend to turn it into a home for retired seamen.
Then you should have said so in your will.
I didn't leave a will.
Why not?
Because I did not expect to kick the blasted gas on with my blasted foot.
I won't be shouted at. For 1 year I've been shouted at and ordered about, and I'm sick of it, you hear? Blast, blast, blast!
Temper.
Or laughed at, either. I won't leave this house, I won't.
No, believe that. Stop that blasted blubbering, madam, or...
I love this house. I can't explain it. It was as if the house itself were welcoming me, asking me to rescue it from being so empty. You can't understand that, can you? All right, then I'm a silly woman, but that's the way I feel.
So, you love the house. Well, I'll admit, that's a point. And you did not frighten like the others. That's a point, too. All right, you may stay here, madam, but on trial.
Oh, thank you, Captain Gregg.
No, keep your distance, woman.
I'm sorry. You made me so happy.
No intention of making you happy. I merely want to do what's best for the house.
Then you'll go away and leave us alone?
I will not go away. Why should I?
Oh, because of my child. I don't want her frightened into fits.
But I never frighten children into fits.
But think of the bad language she'd learn.
Oh, confound it, madam. My language is most controlled.
Well, Anna is much too young to see ghosts.
Oh, very well. I'll make a bargain with you. Leave my bedroom as it is, and I'll promise not to go in any other room in the house. Then your brat and your servant need never know anything about me.
But if you keep the best bedroom, where should I sleep?
In the best bedroom.
But...
Oh, in heaven's name, madam. I am a spirit. I have no body. I haven't had one in 4 years. Is that clear?
But I can see you.
No. All you see is an illusion, like a blasted lantern slide.
Well, It's not very convincing, but I suppose it's all right.
Always was a fool for a helpless woman.
I am not helpless.
Well, if you're so confoundedly competent, you'll notice that your kettle is about to boil over.
Oh, so it is. Thank you.
One thing more. There is a portrait of me in the living room. I want it removed to the bedroom.
Must I? It's a very poor painting.
It's my painting. I did not invite your criticism.
Well, I only meant it doesn't do you justice. It's...
All right, all right. Tend to your hot water bottles. What a sorry substitute for...
Good night, Captain.
Good night, Mrs. Young. Good afternoon. Well, it's about time you came upstairs. Been waiting for hours. Why I agreed to see you only in this room?
You'll talk to me like a gentleman, Captain Gregg, or I'll go straight downstairs.
Who the devil said you could chop down my tree out there?
I ordered it chopped down.
But hang it on, madam. I planted that tree with my own two hands.
Think how much prettier your garden will look with a rose bed.
I detest roses. I hope the whole blasted bed dies of blight.
Captain Gregg, if you insist on haunting me, you might at least be more agreeable about it.
Why should I be agreeable?
Well, as long as we're living together... I mean, if we're to be thrown together so much, life's too short to be forever barking at each other.
Your life may be short, madam, but I have an unlimited time at my disposal.
Then say something pleasant for a change.
Well, that's a pretty dress you have on.
Thank you.
Much better than smothering yourself in all that black crepe.
I happen to have been wearing mourning for my husband.
Whom you didn't love.
How dare you say that?
Because it's true.
You're jealous because no one put on any mourning for you.
That shows how little you know about it.
Some poor misguided female, no doubt.
Five poor misguided females, to be exact.
I should think you'd be ashamed instead of boasting about it.
Why? They misguided themselves. Never raised a finger to help.
That's not what I've heard about sailors.
Seamen, confound it. Sailor. Sailor is a landlubber's word. Now, why did you marry him?
Edwin? I don't really know. He seemed so romantic.
But it was different afterwards. Did he beat you?
Oh, no. Poor Edwin never really did anything. He was an architect, but not a very good one, I'm afraid. He couldn't have designed a house like this. Who did design it?
I did, of course.
It reminds me of something. An old song or a poem.
Magic casements opening on the foam of paler seas in fair lands forlorn.
Strange to find a sea captain quoting Keats.
Oh, life can go slow at sea. Plenty of time for reading in the off watches.
How wonderful it must be. Reading lyric poetry up in the crow's nest. With a sheet bellying in the wind.
Sails, blasted old madam. A sheet is a line, a rope. Ropes can't belly.
Well, I don't know anything about the sea except that it's romantic.
That's what all landsmen think. Seamen know better.
Then why do they go to sea?
Because they haven't got enough sense to stay home. Like those two women at the front door.
What two women?
Look out the window.
No.
Huh? Who are they?
My blasted in-laws. And Martha's sure to send them up here.
Well, what do you want of me?
Well, do something. Hide. Go away and decompose.
Dematerialize, madam.
But whatever it is, do it quickly. They're on the stairs.
Oh, no fear. They can't hear or see me unless I choose that they should.
Oh, then please don't choose. I'll get rid of them.
Why don't you let me? You know, I've had considerable experience.
No, you're not to do anything.
Well, Lucy, talking to yourself?
Oh, my poor Lucy. So pale, so fragile.
Mother Muir, Eva, how nice of you to call.
Martha said you were up here resting. Oh, how can you rest in such an ugly room?
Lucy, poor, poor child.
And what a hideous portrait on the wall.
With a face like yours, madam, you'd be wise to shut up.
Oh, no.
Why on earth don't you take it down?
Because I like it, Eva.
Liar.
Well, of course, if you want a portrait of a strange man in your room, well, that's up to you.
Oh, Lucy, we have such bad news. The gold shares, your entire income.
What about the gold shares?
They're worthless. The miners closed down.
No more dividends, Lucy. It was all in this morning's newspaper.
Oh. So we've come to take you and Anna back home with us.
Eva... Eva, you're sure of this?
Of course.
No, now don't make a scene in front of these swabs.
I don't intend to make a scene.
Oh, of course you don't. You're my brave little girl.
Please, Mother Muir.
Make her stop that caterwauling, or by Judas, I will take a hand.
You keep out of this.
Lucy, how can you talk to me like that?
Oh, blast.
Eva, did you hear what she said?
Yes, Mother, I heard. Now stop sniveling.
But I didn't mean you.
Then just whom did you mean? You're acting in a most peculiar fashion, Lucy. Obviously, this dreadful place has preyed on your mind.
Bats in your belfry.
Pipe down.
What?
I mean, I want to think.
But why? With your income gone, you'll have to come home with us.
Don't do it, Lucy.
Do you want me to stay?
Yes.
Lucy, are you out of your mind?
You really mean it?
Of course I mean it.
Lucy.
I'm sorry, Mother. It's very kind of you, but I'm going to stay. I'll manage somehow. So please be good enough to shove off.
Shove off? She's insane. I want nothing more to do with her. Well, you don't have to push me, Mother. I'm going.
Eva, I'm not pushing you.
Stop it, Mother, please.
But I'm not touching you, Eva.
No. Oh, stop it. Captain Gregg.
I'm out on the balcony.
Are you? Well, I've had just about all of this. I'm going to stand.
Stop talking in riddles.
2 days ago, you shoved those poor women out of this house.
Squealing like a couple of pigs.
That wasn't enough, was it? What do you mean by pushing Mr. Coombs down the stairs just now? I only hope that when I reach the afterlife, I'll have a little more dignity.
Dignity? You call it dignified, throwing yourself at a herring-guttered swab like Coombs?
I asked Mr. Coombs here because he's the logical man to help me find lodgers for the summer.
Lodgers? Oh, I made a mistake. Oh, forgive me, my dear. I thought you wanted to sign Coombs on for a husband.
Mr. Coombs, that walrus?
Well, it's my experience that women will do anything for money.
And now you and your blasted experience have ruined everything.
Why? I could not allow lodgers in any case. They're worse than passengers at sea.
It's them or starve.
Not at all. I've solved your problem. Madam, you're going to write a book.
Book? Don't be ridiculous. It's all I can do to write a postcard.
But I can write a book, and you can put it down on paper for me.
What sort of a book?
The story of my life. Ride and Swash. Yes, Ride and Swash by Captain X.
I don't think that's at all a nice title.
It's not meant to be. It's meant to be sensational, like the subject.
But it takes months to write a book. What are we to live on in the meantime?
Well, you have a little jewelry. Pawn it.
Oh, but I couldn't.
Oh, blast your eyes, madam. Will you understand you're trying to claw off a leash or? You can't afford to be squeamish.
I do understand, and don't swear at me.
All right, then be sensible. Now, since we're going to be collaborators, you may call me Daniel.
That's very good of you.
And I shall call you Lucia.
My name is Lucy.
No, it doesn't do you justice, my dear. Women named Lucy are always being imposed upon. But Lucia, now, there is a name for an Amazon. For a queen.
I don't feel much like a queen. I feel frightened and confused. Martha and I could always get along, but it's my baby. It's Anna.
Well, don't you trust me?
Oh, I do, Daniel, when I'm talking to you. But when you're not here, I... Well, it's asking a great deal to expect anyone to entrust our whole future to someone who isn't real.
But I am real, Lucia. I'm here because you believe I'm here. Keep on believing, and I'll always be real to you.
Yes, Daniel.
Now, get into town and pawn your blasted jewelry, and don't come back without a typewriter. Ah, yes, Flood and Swash by Captain X.
Two of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir will continue in a moment. Libby, have you any romantic tidbits for our audience tonight?
Well, it's not a big name story, Mr. Kennedy, but a very unusual, real wedding took place on the set of My Wild Irish Rose during the last week of shooting.
Oh, who were the lucky people?
Two of the dancers in this fabulous new musical of Warner Brothers. And just imagine, Andrea King was the matron of honor. She looked almost like a bride herself in hand-embroidered white batiste. It was one of the costumes she wears in the picture.
And the best man?
Dennis Morgan.
Wow.
Andrea's romantic leading man. In fact, the entire cast of My Wild Irish Rose came as guests. And they looked very colorful in their Celtic costumes.
Did the bride wear something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue?
Uh-huh. And Andrea saw to the new. She gave her some gossamer sheer nylons with embroidered clocks of tiny seed pearls.
You mean to wear?
Why, certainly. Andrea told her just to lux them, and they'd wear beautifully. And I'm sure that's true because Lux flakes are so gentle, even the sheerest nylons last twice as long.
You're absolutely right, Libby. Those famous strain tests proved it. Runs came sooner, when stockings were washed with strong soap or rubbed with cake soap. All kinds of stockings, nylons, silk, rayon, and cotton, lasted twice as long when they were washed with Lux Flakes.
That's just like getting an extra pair of stockings every time you buy a pair. And remember, girls, Lux Care prolongs the wear of everyday stockings as well as Super Shears. So Lux them after every wearing. Lux stockings last twice as long.
We return you now to William Keeley.
Act Two of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, starring Charles Boyer as Captain Gregg and Madeline Carroll as Lucy. Summer has come to Whitecliffe by the sea, but there's no clamor of lodgers in Gull Cottage. Instead, week after week, the constant clatter of a typewriter as the ghost of Captain Daniel Gregg dictates the vivid story of his life to Lucy Muir.
Well? Why have you stopped typing? You didn't finish the sentence.
It's that awful word, Daniel.
It's a perfectly good word.
I think it's a horrible word.
It means what it says, doesn't it?
All too clearly.
Oh, hang it all, Lucia. If you're going to be prudish, we'll never get the book finished. Now, where was I?
Upstairs.
Yes, yes. The customs of Marseille are different to any...
From any.
Oh, who cares? This is not a blast literary epic. It is the unvarnished story of a seaman's life.
It certainly is unvarnished.
All right. Smear on some varnish then, but leave the guts in it.
I think there should be a chapter about your boyhood, your school days.
Never went to school. I was educated by the vicar.
Poor man, you must have had a dreadful time.
Oh, I suppose you were a model of all the virtues at 12.
Certainly I was, and Anna shall be the same.
Anna is not fat, as you probably were.
I wasn't fat, I was skinny.
Still worse. Hair ribbons and 1,000 freckles, probably. I notice you still have freckles.
Very few, and I've been told they're quite becoming.
Let me see. Yes, they are there.
Oh, good heavens, the time.
Get some sleep. We'll put in a full day tomorrow. Oh, Lucia, you're sure you've said nothing about my being here? I mean, Martha knows nothing. Your little girl?
Of course not. They know I'm busy writing a book, but that's all. You've been very thoughtful about keeping your promise not to... to disturb them.
Madam, I'm a man of my word.
And what words? Daniel, what did your aunt do when you ran away to sea?
Oh, thank heaven, probably. There was no one around to fill her house with mongrel dogs and track mud on her carpets.
Did she write to you?
Every Sunday, for 7 years. I was at sea when she died. What are you thinking?
How lonely she must have been. With her silent, empty house and her clean carpet.
Good night, Lucia. Oh, the devil with your dawdling, Lucia.
But I'm so tired, Daniel.
Oh, I sent a sword too and the book is all finished.
I can't see straight or think straight.
You don't have to think. Just write this down. To all who follow the hard and honorable profession of the sea, to the after guard... to masters, mates, and engineers, to able-bodied and ordinary seamen, to stokers, carpenters, sailmakers, and sea cooks, I dedicate this volume. The end.
The end.
Well, tomorrow you take it to the publishers.
Why did you write the book, Daniel? It wasn't merely to save the house for me.
Partly that, and partly to help people understand those poor devils who go to sea for want of better sense. Well, now... about the publishers. You'll go to Tackett and Sproul in Great Smith Street.
Yes, Daniel.
Now, be sure you see Sproul. He once came in fourth in a yacht race. Fancies himself a seafaring man.
Daniel, I...
Hmm?
What's to become of us? You and me.
Well, nothing's to become of me. Everything's happened that can happen. Have you forgotten I'm an illusion?
Such an earthy illusion. When we were writing the book, I was happy. But now, when I try to think of the future, it's all dark and confused. Like that fog out there tonight.
Oh, you've been working too hard. Cooped up in the house too long.
But I love it here.
Yes, but you should be out in the world, meeting people, seeing men.
I have no desire to see men.
Well, confound it, you should. You know, you are a very attractive woman. You owe it to yourself.
Yes, Daniel.
Ah. Take the early train, Lucia. Tackett and Sproul, Great Smith Street.
Okay, we got a little bit of a break here. Be right back.
Yourself.
Yes, Daniel.
Ah, take the early train, Lucia. Hackett and Sproul, Great Smith Street.
Impossible, madam. You can't see Mr. Sproul without an appointment.
But I have a manuscript here, and I'm sure
he'll... A cookbook, perhaps. Gardening. Another Life of Byron. Oh, really, Mrs. Muir? Oh, well, I'll mail you a notice when Mr. Sproul can see you, probably next month.
Thank you.
Surely... You're not leaving, Mrs. Muir?
I have no appointment.
Then you shall have mine.
But, Mr. Fair.
Oh, it's all right, Albert. Just tell old Sproul I wouldn't wait. Well, aren't you going to thank me?
It's very good of you, but I'm afraid I can't accept.
You're a very beautiful creature. I can do no less than insist that you take my appointment.
Mr. Sproul will see Mr. Fairley, Albert.
Well, Mrs. Muir, are you going in, or shall I carry you in?
Really?
I don't know how you got in here, young woman, but this much I do know. I will not allow you to take up my time, and I will not review your manuscript. Shut up and sit down, you blasted rampus.
Oh, dear.
Madam, are you a would-be author or a would-be ventriloquist?
I don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Sproul.
I distinctly heard... And such a nice-looking woman, too.
Mr. Sproul, please, this book, it isn't what you think it is at all. It's the unvarnished record of a sailor's, seaman's life.
Seaman? What could you know about seamen?
Oh, a great deal, believe me.
Unvarnished, you say?
Shamefully so.
Oh, dear me. Well, perhaps I'll glance at it after all. Sit down, young woman, sit down.
Better take another walk, Mr. Fairley. She's still in there with Mr. Sproul.
She must be starving.
Oh, I fetched them a tray of lunch some time ago. I'll wait, Albert. I'll wait.
Well, Mrs. Muir, this is quite a book.
Thank you.
You're not going to pretend that you wrote it.
No.
No, it's a man's book. And what a man. Captain X. I'd like very much to meet him.
Oh, I'm afraid that's impossible. He's away.
Oh?
Oh, I'm afraid that's impossible. He's away.
Oh, a voyage, of course.
Yes, a very long voyage.
Oh, bless my soul, what a story. We shall publish it, of course, Mrs. Muir. You just leave everything to me. And be happy that you know such a man. There aren't many like him these days. You appreciate that.
I think I do, Mr. Sproul. And thank you very much.
Got Sir Safi upstairs. I thought I'd wait for you down here.
Mr. Fairley.
Quite an appointment you had, wasn't it? But it's pouring now, and you haven't an umbrella.
I'm quite capable of finding a cab.
Oh, now, please. I deserve a minute, don't I?
Dear me, I certainly didn't bargain for this blasted rain.
As you said, you could find a cab. Ruin your hat, though, wouldn't it? Now, if you ask me nicely.
Please. Would you mind?
Ah, you're smiling. I'll be right back. But why shouldn't I ride to the station with you? Perhaps I, too, must catch a train.
I don't believe it. Really, Mr. Fairley, the sheer...
Brass. The word you're looking for is brass.
Exactly. Still, anyway, I should be grateful to you. You see, Mr. Sproul has agreed to publish my book.
He always had a weakness for feminine literature.
Well, this book might surprise you.
It's surprising enough to find a lady author infinitely more exciting than her heroine could possibly be.
I assume you also write, Mr. Fairley?
Yes. Children's books. Forgive me, Mrs. Muir, but I am Uncle Neddy.
Uncle Neddy?
Ridiculous, isn't it?
Why, you're adored by half the children in the world.
Oh, I loathe the little monsters.
My little girl is not a monster.
I shall make an exception, then. I look forward to meeting her, Mrs. Muir. Your husband also.
My husband is dead.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, what a liar I am. I'm not sorry at all. As a matter of fact, I'm... your book. Tell me about your book.
Well,
Uncle Nady. By Godfrey, what a load of bilge.
Daniel, so you've been eavesdropping.
I thought he said he had to catch a train, too.
I rather think he only wanted to ride to the station with me.
The way he was smirking at you, like a cat at a fishmonger's.
I found him rather charming.
Rather charming. Now you're starting to talk like him.
Well, how in blue blazes do you want me to talk?
Has better.
I think you're being extremely childish.
You should have pushed him out of the cab. In another minute, I would have.
Daniel, why, I believe you're jealous.
Well, of course I'm not jealous. Jealousy is a disease of the flesh. I haven't had any flesh for years.
I've never known you to be more disagreeable. And today, of all days...
Yes, Prowse bought the book.
Yes, and now I can buy the house just as we planned.
I'm not so sure I want you to have the house after all.
I wish you'd stop this sulking. You said yourself that I should see men.
Yes, I said men, not a perfumed pencil pusher.
Anyway, I shall never see him again.
That's what you think.
Where are you going?
I'm disappearing. Always hate trains anyway. I'll see you later, madam.
Martha! Martha, where's Anna?
She's in the orchard with Uncle Neddy.
But I didn't expect him till tea time.
Every day this week he's called.
I can't be rude to him, Martha.
I can. He's out there painting a picture.
How exciting. Whenever you're ready, we'll have tea in the garden.
Yes, ma'am.
I like your little girl, Lucy. She's very wise. For instance, how did she ever guess I wanted to be alone with you?
If you bribed her to go away...
Aren't you interested in what I was painting before?
You're quite accomplished, aren't you? I should think being Uncle Neddy would satisfy anyone.
No, I also paint. Under the name of Renoir.
Oh, you're such a fool, Miles.
You know, that's quite the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
And what, if anything, do you do as Miles Fairley?
Specifically... I behave quite idiotically towards a young lady that I fell in love with in a publisher's office.
Miles, please.
Lucy, am I being unforgivably offensive?
It's just that I'm... Well, I don't quite know what to say.
Then say nothing. Take a look at this canvas.
Why? It's me. You've been painting me in my bathing costume.
Mm-hmm. Every morning I've watched you and Anna on the beach. Not too bad, is it?
It's very flattering, really.
Oh, Lucy, darling, it would take 1,000 Renoirs to... Oh, Lucy.
You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have kissed me.
Well, that was unforgivable, wasn't it? But I shall not go away, even if you send me. And I shall see you again, even though you forbid it.
I'm sure I have no control over where you go or what you do.
Then you won't forbid it.
Miles, please. If you do want to see me, go away now.
Yes, Lucy. If you want it, my darling.
No wonder you wanted to plant a rose garden here.
Daniel.
Perfect setting to be kissed in.
Oh, you've been spying on me again.
No, merely happened to be haunting the vicinity. Why did you let him?
I didn't. He took me unaware.
Now, when a woman is kissed, it's because she wishes to be kissed.
That's nothing but masculine conceit.
Well, now what happens?
Miles Fairley is staying at the inn in the village, as well you know. He'll either remain there or go away. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other.
I think it matters more than you'll admit.
Well, then why bother to ask me? You seem to know my mind better than I do.
He puts brilliantine on his hair.
Most men do.
You can find an excuse for everything.
Only because you're attacking him.
I know. It's a natural human reaction.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't be so superior just because you're not alive.
And he is. Yes, very much so.
It's no crime to be alive.
No. No, my dear. No. Only sometimes it's a great inconvenience. The living can be hurt.
I don't intend to be hurt. But if I'm to go about in the world as you said, it will mean taking risks.
And real happiness is worth almost any risk. Well, watch your soundings, Lucia.
I will, Daniel. I only wish you...
You're alone in the garden, ma'am?
Oh, have some tea, Martha.
But that's odd now. I swear I heard you talking. Is Uncle Nettie still about?
No, he's gone.
Mum, it's none of my business. But what's he up to?
I rather think he's going to ask me to marry him.
And you'd be willing to?
I might. Why shouldn't I?
Because he ain't good enough for you, that's why not. He's the kind of man no decent woman would associate with.
Martha!
I've got a right to my feelings, Mum, and I've got a feeling about him.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that I've been so worried about you lately, Mum.
Don't worry, Martha. I know he isn't perfect, but he's real.
Real?
I thought I was impervious to emotion, but I'm not. I need companionship and laughter and all the things a woman needs.
Well, I hope he can give them to you. I'll go fetch Anna, Mum. Excuse me.
Well, Daniel, haven't you anything to say?
The sea in the moonlight, Lucy, and the warm summer night. I could stay here forever, my darling.
I've never felt like this before, Miles.
How do you feel?
I don't know. Like looking down from high up. All dizzying. And unsure.
You won't fall. I'll hold you.
It isn't right. It can't be to feel like this.
It is right. Because you're happy.
I should go back to the house. It's Anna's bedtime.
Oh, just this one night. Can't you pretend you've forgotten?
Miles, what's wrong, darling?
I'm jealous. Oh, little girl.
She's my daughter. I can't forget her.
When you're with me, I want you to forget everyone else in the whole world.
You're a magician. You make it seem all wrong to consider my duty. And only right that I put my arms around you to be kissed. To be loved.
Lucia, can you hear me? Asleep, huh? I thought you were one woman with sense. But you're like all the rest of them. Lucia, wake up. I'm talking to you. Blast it all, I said it. But... No, sleep on, Lucia. Sleep. I should have known. You've made your choice, the only choice you could make. You've chosen life, and that is as it should be. Whatever the reckoning. That's why I must go away. I can't help you now. Lucia, listen to me. Listen, my dear. You've been dreaming. Even now, you are dreaming. Dreaming of a sea captain that haunted this house. Of talks you've had with him. Even a book you both wrote together. But you wrote the book, Lucia. You and no one else. A book you imagined from this house and from that portrait on the wall. Now, it's been a dream. And in the years to come, you'll remember it only as a dream. And it will die as all dreams die, at waking. But how you would have loved the North Cape and the fjords in the midnight sun, where the blue water rushes into green, the Falklands, where a southerly gale whips the whole sea white as snow. What we both have missed, Lucia. What we both have missed. Goodbye, Lucia. Goodbye, my darling.
We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Before we bring you Act Three of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, I want to introduce a delightful young lady whom 20th Century Fox has recently added to his roster of young talent, Miss Jane Nye. In fact, Jane is so photogenic that a portrait of her won her a screen test. Have you met any of the top-ranking stars yet, Jane?
Yes, Joan Crawford. I met her the first day she started work on Daisy Canyon.
Oh, that's a picture Joan was keen to play in from the moment she read the book.
And she was wonderful in the love scenes with Dana Andrews.
Yeah, Joan knows how to get dramatic value out of a scene, too. Like the later scenes in Daisy Canyon, when she's married to Henry Fonda.
And she always looks so lovely. I was on the set one day when her stand-in was posing in some lovely lingerie similar to Joan's costume.
And less delicate versions, I'm sure.
Yes, but even these were lovely. I could hardly believe it when the stand-in told me they had already been luxed a number of times. And that Joan's even lovelier things get luxed, too. John Kennedy ought to be interested in that.
I am, Jane, but it's not surprising. Leading Hollywood studios specify gentle Lux care for everything washable because it's so safe.
Well, I've been a Lux fan for years myself.
As a matter of fact, Jane, Lux underthings stay lovely three times as long. A scientific laboratory took a number of identical slips and nighties and washed them two ways. One set with a strong soap, the others the Lux way. It wasn't long before those washed with strong soap looked faded and drab, but the Lux ones stayed lovely three times as long.
Well, that's a big help to any girl's budget.
Right. And that means you can have three times as many pretty undies without spending any more. Because instead of just replacing worn-out faded ones, you can buy extra undies and have three times as many. Thank you, Jane Nye, for being here tonight. Back now to our producer, William Keeley.
Act three of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, with Charles Boyer as Captain Gregg and Madeline Carroll as Lucy. The coming of Miles Fairley into the life of Lucy Muir has marked the passing of the ghost of Captain Gregg. But Lucy scarcely noticed his disappearance in her love for her handsome suitor and the excitement over the success of a book called Blood and Swash.
Imagine it, Martha. A check for £200 from Mr. Sproul.
Another £200 for that awful book? Lummy, Mum, such language.
And Mr. Sproul wants me to go to London immediately. Some more papers to sign.
Then off to town you go, Mum. Don't you worry about Anne and me.
But I can't possibly go to London. Mr. Fairley's coming. We're having a picnic.
You mean he is?
I heard you, Martha. Please remember that I'm going to marry him.
Yes, Mum.
By the way, I've been thinking, we might put that portrait of Captain Gregg up in the attic.
Don't you like it anymore?
Oh, it was so silly of me to hang it here in my bedroom. I don't know what possessed me.
Yes, Mum. Oh, I most forgot. Here, boy brought this note for you from the village.
Oh?
From the bank, is it, Mum?
No, it's from Mr. Fairley. Oh, how dreadful. He's been called up to London for a few days. But it's not dreadful at all. I'll go to London, too. I'll see Mr. Sproul as he wishes, and I'll see Miles. I'll surprise him, Martha. Quickly now, fetch Anna. I must say goodbye to her.
Yes, ma'am?
I'd like to see Mr. Fairley, please. I'm Mrs. Muir.
Thank you, ma'am. If you'll wait in there, please.
Who's that, Hilda?
Mrs. Muir, ma'am.
Oh? Perhaps I can help you, Mrs. Muir.
Did I hear you say you wanted to see my husband?
If you don't mind waiting, he'll be back soon.
I see.
Won't you sit down?
No, I'd better go. I'm afraid I've made a mistake.
Mistake, Mrs. Muir?
Yes, I'm very sorry.
I think I understand, my dear. I'm sorry, too. Truly, I am. You see, it isn't the first time something like this has happened.
Now, Mum, you've all but cried your eyes out. You're home now where you belong.
Oh, Martha, what a fool.
There. He ain't worth it. Blast his eyes, he ain't worth it.
Martha, do you know what day this is?
Wash day.
Yes, but it was exactly a year ago that we came here. Do you remember that afternoon? I went upstairs and I lay down before tea.
You're hidden for a cup of tea, Mum.
No, Martha. I'm thinking of the dream I had that afternoon a year ago. Such a strange dream. Oh, well.
Anna will be coming home from school soon, Mum. Will you be taking her for a walk along the beach?
Of course. I wouldn't miss it for the world. My little girl, Martha. She's all my life now.
And most of mine, too.
Soon there'll be no more walks. All too soon. She's growing up. School, then a university, young men, marriage. Oh, Martha, it will be on us before we know it. Before we know it.
Dear Mother, it's so strange here at the university, so utterly different than Whitecliff. But I love it, darling. If only I didn't miss you and Martha so much. I count the days.
Martha, I just don't believe it. Anna will be 18 on Friday. Well, come on, we'll walk to the village. We must get her package off to her today.
I'd be home on Saturday, Mother. Don't worry, I haven't been thrown out of the university. Just a wonderful opportunity to motor down to see you. And maybe, darling, maybe to surprise you, too. You see, there's a young man I met.
Darling, oh, I'm so glad to see you.
Did you get my letter, Mother?
Yes, dear, but I don't understand. I wish you'd be more specific in your letters.
Come on in, Bill. Well, am I being specific now? Don't be shy, Bill. Here she is, my mother.
How do you do?
How do you do?
His real name is Sir Evelyn Anthony Scave, and we're thinking of getting engaged.
Anna.
Believe me, Mrs. Muir, I haven't even asked her yet.
We've come for your blessing, Mother, and we haven't had tea.
Anna, you quite take my breath away.
Bill, darling, just make yourself at home in there. We'll sing out when we want you. We'll be in the kitchen. Two more for tea, Martha.
Anna. Oh, just look at them. She's home. She's really home. And you'll find a strange man in the living room. I gather his name is Sir Evelyn Scaife, and Anna wants to marry him.
I met him at a dance, Mother. He's a sub-lieutenant in the Navy. You know my weakness for sailormen. Oh, I've never been so happy in all my life.
Then I'm happy too, darling. And I won't waste time now with questions.
Now, I can't make tea with such distractions going on. Out in the garden now if you want to talk. Both of you.
Mother, I've discussed it all with Bill. Of course, we won't get married till I'm out of the university. But you ought to come and live with us when we do. You and Martha.
No, darling, no.
Oh, but you must. You've been alone so much of your life.
You're sweet, Anna. And I'm proud of you. But I love this house. I've been very happy here. And I shall live here until I die.
With Captain Gregg?
What did you say?
With the ghost of Captain Gregg?
Anna, what are you talking about?
Oh, I knew the captain very well when I was a little girl. First year we lived here. We used to have the most wonderful talk.
You didn't.
Oh, it was all a game I'd made up, of course. Sort of a dream game. It was very real while it lasted. And then he stopped coming suddenly. I suppose I was growing too old and sophisticated for him. Oh, but I grieved and grieved. I even... Mother... Darling, you look as if you'd seen it. Don't tell me you see him, too.
No, Anna. No, not for years.
But then you did. Mother, you don't suppose he really haunted us?
No, darling. Things like that can't happen. It was only a dream.
The same dream for both of us?
Perhaps I set you off by telling you about my dreams. Little girls are very impressionable.
Oh, I don't remember your telling me. Oh, tell me now. I'd love to hear about them.
But I can't remember them very well. Just bits and pieces, a phrase here and there, a look. I think I dreamed most of that book I wrote. I must have. I never could have thought of it. All these years, I've tried to remember, but I can't.
Do you know what I think? I think you fell in love with him, too.
I did nothing of the sort.
Oh, I wouldn't blame you if you had. When did you start seeing him?
After about a year. I dreamed we quarreled. It was about a man.
Uncle Neddy.
Anna, you knew that Miles Fairley and I...
Oh, I used to pray you wouldn't marry him.
And you were so right. I saw him 5 years ago at a dinner party. Bald and fat and drinking too much. And he cried. It seems his wife finally had enough and left him. And to think I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him.
Perhaps he did exist, Mother, Captain Gregg. Perhaps he did come back and talk to us. Wouldn't it be wonderful if he had? Then you'd have something... You know what I mean. To look back on. Happiness.
No, darling. We just made him up, you and I. He never existed. I just wasn't intended to have that kind of happiness. And I haven't missed it, really, I haven't. Oh, I've been lonely at times, but there have been compensations. You. And now Bill. And dear Martha... And this house, the sea and the girls, and memories. I've had those, you know, even if it was a dream. Now come along. We'll join your young man for tea.
If she thinks it was a dream, I cannot blame her. It was all my own doing. I told her it was a dream. How long ago this occurred. Even Anna is older now than Lucia was when she first stepped into this house. Anna, long since married, children of her own, grown children. And Lucia, white and withered and full of years. Ah, blast it all. When I decided to be noble, I never thought she'd live to be 80. Lucia! Lucia!
coming, Hemum. What are you doing out on that balcony? Don't you know what the night air does to you?
I'm coming, Martha. I'm coming.
What were you doing out there?
I don't know. What difference does it make?
I hope you remember what the doctor told you.
That I'm an old woman. Well, so is he. There was a letter this afternoon from Anna. Little Lucy's engaged.
Little Lucy?
To the captain of a transatlantic airplane. Anna's very happy about it. Says it must run in the family.
Airplanes?
I suppose she means captains.
Here, you drink your hot milk.
I'm too tired. I have a funny pain in my arm.
No wonder standing out there in that fog. Sit down now and drink it while it's hot.
I don't want any hot milk.
Now, don't get into a state.
I am not in a state. I just want to be left alone. Bossing me around all the time.
Well, I'll leave it on the table. Take it or not, I don't care.
Bossing me. I'm tired. Milk. All right, I'll drink it. Martha. Martha. I feel so cold.
Lucia. At last. You'll never be tired again, Lucia. Or old again. Look at you. Radiant. Like the day you came here. Come, Lucia. Come.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Lonely Idol from 51 Tales by Lord Dunsany. I had from a friend an old outlandish stone, a little swine-faced idol to whom no one prayed. And when I saw his melancholy case as he sat cross-legged at receipt of prayer, holding a little scourge that the years had broken, and no one heeded the scourge, and no one prayed, and no one came with squealing sacrifice, and he had been a god, then I took pity on the little forgotten thing and prayed to it as perhaps they prayed long since, before the coming of the strange dark ships, and humbled myself and said, O idol, idol of the hard pale stone, invincible to the years, O scourge holder, give ear, for behold, I pray. O little pale green image whose wanderings are from far, know thou that here in Europe and in other lands nearby, too soon there pass from us the sweets and song and the lion strength of youth. Too soon do their cheeks fade, their hair grow gray, and our beloved die. Too brittle is beauty, too far off is fame, and the years are gathered too soon. There are leaves, leaves falling, everywhere falling. There is autumn among men, autumn and reaping. Failure there is, struggle, dying and weeping, and all that is beautiful hath not remained, but is even as the glory of morning upon the water. Even our memories are gathered, too, with the sound of the ancient voices, the pleasant ancient voices that come to our ears no more. The very gardens of our childhood fade, and there dims with the speed of the years even the mind's own eye. Oh, be not any more the friend of time, for the silent hurry of his malevolent feet have trodden down what's fairest. I almost hear the whimper of the years running behind him hound-like, and it takes few to tear us. All that is beautiful, he crushes down as a big man tramples daisies, all that is fairest. How very fair are the little children of men. It is autumn with all the world, and the stars weep to see it. Therefore, no longer be the friend of time, who will not let us be, and be not good to him, but pity us, and let lovely things live on for the sake of our tears. Thus prayed I, out of compassion, one windy day to the snout-faced idol to whom no one kneeled. The end.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the next 7 years of bigger and bigger enrollments, America's grade schools will need nearly 250,000 extra teachers besides those to fill normal vacancies. This great need, plus the growing public interest in education and improvements in schools, make elementary school teaching a more rewarding career than ever. A career that high school and college students should certainly consider. Education holds America's future. Perhaps your future.
I said earlier that we would have some science fiction coming up here in the third segment. And indeed we do. It's from Suspense, which, although it usually specialized in thriller stories, often stories set in exotic locations or on the high seas, did occasionally dabble in science fiction. Today's episode from January the 21st of 1962 is one such. It's called 2462. It's a dandy episode about an American poet who rebels against the system and gets thrown in jail for wasting time at work writing doggerel. As you can probably figure from the title, the year is 2462, 400 years in the future from when the story was written. The Earth is grossly overpopulated and an altogether serious place. For his crime, he has to face trial by a computerized judicial system. It's well done and definitely worth a half an hour of your time.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I only ask the place and time enough to give some small meaning to the meaningless and point to having lived.
Listen now to 2462, starring Lawson Zerbe and written especially for Suspense by George Bamber.
I woke up on the floor, shivering. All my clothes were gone. It was like a nightmare. A nightmare I had dreamed many times before and dreaded coming true. At first, I thought I'd awakened in my own room, that somebody had taken all my furniture as well as my clothes. But then I realized it wasn't so much a room as it was a cube. An empty, sterile cube with luminescent walls that hummed with the soft blue-green light. I jumped up then and threw myself against the walls trying to find a way out. And there was none. No door, no window. Not even a ventilation tube. I banged on the walls and screamed, but no one answered me. Nothing but the smooth, plastic, blue-green walls that hummed with the electric current in them, that gave them light and air and death. I slumped back down to the soft, foam, plastic floor of my cell, afraid to admit to myself where I was, and squeezed my eyes tight against the walls because I was afraid I was going to cry. Just then, the wall in front of me slid back on its tracks, and in the pale light of the corridor, I could see a large, shambling man in prison coveralls with a 9-digit number tattooed on his forehead. What do you want?
Follow me.
He turned his back on me and stepped on the moving conveyor in the corridor. I stumbled after him because I was afraid to be alone. And I had to know what was happening. Where are you taking me?
No talk. Follow me.
I could tell by the steady movement of his jaw and the dull, faraway look on his face that I could question him all day and it wouldn't do any good. He was chewing Tranquil gum. And the effect of that stuff lasts for a week. I could scream at him, and it wouldn't bother him. Nothing would bother him, unless I tried to escape. I knew where I was now. There could be no doubt of that. I rode behind my silent guard, up and down what seemed like endless corridors, past row on row of cells just like the one I had left. Some of them had their reverse scanners on. That means you could see in, but the prisoners couldn't see out. Some of them were sitting in the middle of their cube, staring at nothingness. But most of them were slumped on the floor, asleep. Kept that way by somnogas.
a gentle gas that kept the inmates unconscious and manageable until their cases came up. I knew one day I would wind up here. And here I was in the most scientific escape-proof termination center in the world.
In here.
The guard stepped off the conveyor in front of a heavy chrome door marked courtroom and pushed a button. I moved through the doorway like a schoolboy called upon to recite. The room was not much bigger than the cell I had left, and as empty. A lieutenant sat behind a desk. His plastic bars gleamed at me brightly from his shoulders. I heard my guard close the door behind us. And then I noticed that one wall was completely covered with the sleepy face of a computer.
Sit down. Sit down.
I did as I was told on the only other piece of furniture in the place, a small three-legged stool in the middle of the room. I wished that they had given me some sort of clothes to cover my nakedness because there was a young girl, a secretary, sitting at an electrowriter, taking down everything that was said, feeding it into the computer.
Your identity.
Frank Smith.
I said your identity.
I told you, sir.
Do not hold up the proceedings. Time is precious. You were issued a combination serial, social security, and telephone number that was imprinted on your forehead at birth. From here, it appears to be 108-303-715. Is that correct?
That is the number tattooed on my head.
Clerk, let the record show the subject is hostile.
Yes, sir.
Let us proceed. Case of the People versus 108-303-715. Convened in the first court at 1800 hours in this day of our world, 18 of November, 2462. 108-303-715, you are charged with two counts. One, writing non-productive literature. And two, wasting government time. How do you plead, true or false?
I don't understand.
Have you or have you not written poetry?
I'm a clerk in the space department.
True or false?
False.
I have here some 100 pieces of doggerel. I shall read a portion of one. See if you recognize it. In my treeless, greenless office, mid the bustling mad despair, I hunger after exile from the chrome and filtered air. Well?
It's not a very good poem, is it?
Did you or did you not write this poem? True or false?
I hardly see...
Answer,
what...
true or false?
False!
Account, then, for the fact that this poem was written on your electro-typewriter.
There are millions of electro-writers.
As you may or may not know, each electro-writer has its own characteristics, as individual as fingerprints. An expert has identified this poem as coming from your machine. I can call him in to testify if you like.
There are two shifts. I'm not the only one assigned to that machine.
You are not only a poet, but you are a very stupid one. Every electrowriter imprints the date and hour of transmission. In every case, the poems are written on your machine, while you are supposed to be sitting at it doing the invaluable work of the space department. What have you to say?
What can I say?
You are charged with two very grave counts in this court. Writing non-productive literature and wasting government time. How do you answer?
How else can I answer? Guilty.
108-303-715. You insist on imposing on this court concepts of legality as ancient as 1962. In this court, subjects are neither guilty nor not guilty. They are simply productive or non-productive, social or antisocial. I repeat... Are these charges against you true or false? Answer one or the other.
False.
Very well. Clerk?
Yes, sir.
Signal the judicial computer that all facts and considerations of this court are now at hand. And submit the subject's work record, fitness report, sanity estimation, IQ, cooperation quotient. Yes,
I watched like a sleepwalker as the lieutenant handled the thin, punched, and tabulated cards that were the history of my life. I watched with a gambler's fascination as one by one she fitted them into the monster's mouth and the lights blinked and flitted across its face, digesting my life and worth on Earth and estimating in hours and minutes how much longer I would be permitted to stay. Suddenly, I realized the computer had stopped. The lights across its face were dark. The machine's mouth spat out a thin red plastic card and the girl handed it to the lieutenant.
Number 108-303-715, It is the decision of this court that you are no longer essential or desirable to life on this earth.
What?
On the 343rd day of the year 2462, you will be taken from your cell to the Division of Agriculture for processing.
No.
Your corporal body will be reduced to its basic components.
Oh, no.
And your existence on earth will be terminated.
No. Oh, no, no, no. No, in God's name, give me another chance.
It is the decision of this court.
You can't condemn a man to die just for writing a few lines of poetry.
Not for writing a few lines of poetry, for being a poet. If you were a scientist or an engineer, we could afford to overlook these recessive characteristics in your personality. Forgive the writing of a few lines of doggerel. But you are not a scientist or engineer or even a mathematician. You are a clerk in the Space Department. And according to your work record, not very good at that.
I have no head for figures.
At a time when the world is crying out in need of mechanical and technical brains, the best you're suited for is rhyming lists of words on scraps of paper. Can you possibly imagine that
I
our society...
I stood looking at the young man who was a lieutenant. Saw his eyes on me, his lips move, but no sound came out. Everything he said was true. The world was in trouble. 300, 400 years ago, they thought they were having a population explosion. They should see it now. People live as far beneath the ground as they did above. New York was built out 30 miles over the water, and people commuted to work from as far away as Ohio and Michigan. Even the deserts were populated. It took mathematical and technical brains just to keep it all going, not to mention the problem of finding new worlds in space.
It must be apparent that even if you had some mechanical ability for the service and repair of computers, machines...
I could try to learn.
But you have no mechanical ability. Your aptitude tests show that.
Well, just give me a chance to
learn.
There
is no time. The world needs these talents now, not a year from now, months from now.
Well, all I want is to live.
We all want to live. That's the whole problem. The function of this court is to weed out the people who are not necessary to the continuation of life from those who are. Artists, philosophers, theologians, and poets are not necessary. You have been found to be a poet.
I appeal to the mercy of the court.
There is no mercy in a mathematical equation.
Well, give me another chance. Just one.
Number 108-303-715. You are wasting the court's time. I have many more cases to deal with today. As you stand now, you are a drain on the earth's natural resources. In exactly 20 days from now, you will contribute to them. Case dismissed.
Look, I have one favor to ask. Everyone has granted one last request.
What is it?
I have the right, do I not, to spend my remaining days conscious?
Yes, but you should request some gas. Time goes much faster when you're asleep, and then the end is not so painful.
I want to spend my last days conscious.
Conscious? Why?
So I can write.
Write?
Yes, write. I wouldn't have to have an electrowriter in my cell. Just an asthmatic pen would do. I know how to use a pen and some paper. I know you have no power over the decision of the court, but just this one last request is one man to another.
Very well. Orders will be left that a pen and paper are to be placed at your disposal.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
No more can be granted than the law allows. You may spend your remaining days on earth conscious and writing gibberish or poems or whatever you wish. Next case.
I had to bite my tongue to keep from shouting and turning handsprings all the way back to my cell. I had won the right to remain conscious during my last days on earth. The right to have one more chance at life and freedom. I realized fully how small that chance was. In the days when men still believed that crime was cured by punishment, my cell would have been a jailer's dream. The smooth plastic walls were flawless. I searched the whole cube and found no more than the first time I saw them. Not even the little pinholes that admitted the gas that finished you. I had hoped to dig under the soft foam rubber plastic on the floor with the point of my pen, but I dug at it and couldn't even scratch it. For what must have been 5 days, I studied the prison routine in hopes of jamming the door and overpowering one of the guards. But it was impossible. Once a day, the wall was rolled back and food was tossed in, wrapped in electroethylene, and then rolled back again before you could get to them. It was impossible to wait near the wall because the guards could see you waiting there and would not open it until you were well back in the center of the cell. On what must have been the 10th day, I began to have hallucinations. People began to appear in my cell and chat with me. People who had long since been dead. To stave off madness, I picked up the broken stub of my pen and began to write feverishly. I wrote a poem to the girl I had seen once when I was 14. And then I wrote about the last blade of grass I had seen. I wrote faster and faster until I was completely wrapped up in the joy of writing. Writing about all the things I could remember. Until I lost all track of time, of place, and... Oh, no. No, it isn't time. I still have 20 days left. Well, 20 days, he said.
Quiet, son. You still have 2 days to go.
Well, then, what do you want?
To talk. Mind if I come in?
It's your prison.
He didn't come all the way in, but stood in the door, out of sight, off the hall, but blocking my way. He was a very old man with mottled parchment skin. His prison coveralls hung on him like elephant skin. Oh, who are you?
I'm the night duty guard.
What do you want?
Oh, just to talk.
I've never seen you before.
Oh, but I've seen you. Every night I've been looking over your shoulder, reading the things you write.
I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did. I haven't read any new poetry in 50 years, since the computers came in. You got away with words.
Thank you, sir.
That's all right. There's one poem you wrote night before last. I wonder if I could see it again.
Which one, sir?
The one about a man's going to die and doesn't know why.
Oh. You mean this one?
Yes. Yes, that's the one. Would you mind reading it for me? My eyes tire easily.
Okay. In the monumental silence of a long and pointless strife, I'm pained at my reluctance to let go this last of life. I only ask the place and time enough to give some small meaning to the meaningless and point to having lived.
Yes, I like that. How would you like to get out of here?
Are you crazy?
No.
Nobody leaves here alive.
Guards do.
But I'm not a guard.
You could be.
Well, now I know you're crazy.
You could be if you put on my clothes, my uniform.
That wouldn't do any good. They'd still recognize me by the number on my forehead.
That's what gave me the idea. Look at your number and look at mine.
108-808-715.
Only the eights are different.
Yes.
We could take that pen of yours and make your threes look like eights.
But you're an old man. I'm young. They'd recognize the difference immediately.
No, they wouldn't. The only one who sees me is the guard that relieves me, and he's unhappy gum. The only thing he looks at is my number. As long as that's right, he's happy. He couldn't tell you what I looked like if his life depended on it.
But why?
I don't know why. Maybe I just like poetry. Maybe it's because I'm going to die anyway. Look at me. I'm 110. Yesterday I read where they're going to start eliminating everybody over 102. It'll probably be law before the year is out.
But that's still a year to live, maybe more.
A year of what? I can't smell anymore. My taste buds are gone. My hands and feet are always cold.
That's not the real reason, is it?
No. No, it isn't.
Then what is?
I have a granddaughter about your age. beautiful girl. She used to write and paint some when she was young. Of course, we had to discourage it after the computers came in. Now, it just would make me feel good to know they hadn't stamped out the genes for poetry completely. I hate to live in a world where you don't get anything more than what comes blasting in at you over the telecommunicator. Well, what do you say? Are you willing?
I'm willing, if you are.
Oh, good. Now, listen carefully.
He sat up most of the night, explaining his job to me, cross-questioning me to be sure I remembered it right. His job was simple, mostly just pushing buttons. The difficult part would be finding my way out of the huge prison without looking like I was groping and getting off the overhead rail at the right stop to find his daughter's home. Finally, when he was convinced I had it right, he left, promising to change places with me the following night. I was almost afraid to believe him. The hours of what was to be my final night on Earth crept by. The day had been bad enough, but the night was worse. 100 times I decided the night was over, that it had all just been a sadistic trick by the old man so he could watch the agony of my final hours on Earth to pass the time. I was just about to beat against the walls and scream when...
Quickly, help me out of these coveralls.
I thought you wouldn't come.
I'd have to wait till just before the end of the watch so you'd have the best chance of escaping.
How much time do I have left?
About 20 minutes. The day guard will be coming to relieve me soon, so hurry, will you? Where's your pen?
Here it is.
Hold your head still while I change these 3s to 8s.
All right, all right.
Yeah. Remember, stay on the overhead rail until you get out of Arizona. My daughter's the next stop after that.
Okay.
There, you're finished. Goodbye.
I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything. Say goodbye before I change my mind. At best, courage is a quicksilver thing.
Goodbye, old man. And thanks.
Quick, close the door.
I did as I was told, raising my hand to break the circuit. And I watched the old man smile at me at the control board and take up his position in front of it. The clock on the board said 5:10 in the morning. 10 minutes before I would be released.
How's it going?
Huh?
I said, how's it going? Everything quiet?
Oh, fine. I recognized him as the guard that was supposed to relieve the old man. For a minute, I was afraid he recognized me when his eyes drifted across my face. But then they flicked up to my forehead, checked my serial number, and he resumed his steady, quiet chewing.
I came in a little early. You can never tell about the overhead rail when it's going to get jammed up.
Yes, I know. Things are a mess. What's that?
Trouble in cell number 84. See the flashing light on the board?
Yes. Yes, I better turn it off. Cell 84. That was my cell. The one I just left. That meant the old man was probably banging on the walls.
I see cell 84 is scheduled for termination this morning. Probably lost his nerve. They should make them all stay under sonic gas while they're here. Makes them easier to handle that way.
I can't turn the alarm off.
Of course you can't. As long as he's hammering on the walls and screaming that way, you better go down and see what he wants.
Do I have to?
Of course you do. It's the law. He might have something more he wants to say.
I walked down the hall, feeling the guard's eyes on my back. I didn't dare argue with him anymore for fear that he would become concerned. It was all over now. I knew it was all over. I could see the old man beating on the walls of his cell beyond the transparent plastic wall, screaming soundlessly. He had changed his mind. He wanted to live. In a minute, he would be running down the hall, shouting for help. And in 2 hours, I would be dead. I raised my hand to break the electric circuit.
Oh, there you are. I was afraid you wouldn't come back. You took the poems with you, and I couldn't remember that one. All I can remember is I only ask the place. I can't remember how it ends.
I only ask the place and time enough to give some small meaning to the meaningless and point
to having lived.
Yes. Yes. That's it. And point to having lived.
Suspense. You've been listening to 2462, starring Lawson Zerbe, and written especially for Suspense by George Bamber. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr., music supervision by Ethel Huber. Featured in tonight's story were Robert Randall as the lieutenant, Bob Dryden as the old guard, William Mason as the young guard, and Rosemary Rice as the court stenographer. Listen again next week when we return with Please Believe Me, written by Ben Kagan. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. They're the most. Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney weekdays on the CBS Radio Network.
The year 1812 was a tragic one for the people of Maine. The country was at war with England, and the British had pretty well overrun the state. One of the little towns that had not been captured by the Redcoats was Calais, that lay across the border from St. Stephen, Canada. Ahab Watson, in charge of the city's defenses, sat on the gallery of his home and contemplated the plight of his people. He lifted his telescope and focused it upon the headquarters of his friend, Captain Pine of the Canadian militia. He saw a red-coated major of the British regulars dismount from his horse and enter the large frame house, and Ahab wondered what would transpire.
Captain Pine, the obvious vantage point from which to strike at the Americans is through Calais. You will entrench your men along the river and bombard the city.
But Major Barber, sir, we've always been friends of the people of Calais. We couldn't fire on them.
Captain, this is war, and the Americans are enemies. You have your orders, and I'll see that they're carried out.
Major Barber, I don't wish to disobey orders, but it's quite impossible for me to carry them out at present.
Why not?
The captain's face was shamefaced as he replied,
"We haven't any gunpowder."
The British officer stamped out of the room with a promise that gunpowder would be sent and a warning that it had better be used. Hardly had the major departed on the road to Quebec than Captain Pine hurried across the river to tell his friend the bad news. He joined Ahab upon the gallery.
"Yes, Ahab. The major was in rather a dither. He says we're at war, so that makes you and me enemies. Too bad we have to settle our differences now with gunpowder instead of playing checkers."
"Well, son, you just be careful with that gunpowder. Somebody's liable to get hurt."
In due time, a load of gunpowder arrived at St. Stephen. Day followed day, and the war surged back and forth across the country. Yet somehow the militiamen of St. Stephen never got around to cannonading the city of Calais. The war ended with no shots ever being exchanged across the St. Croix River. A short time after the war was over, Major Barber again paid a visit to Captain Pine.
"Captain, the war is over now, but I'm forced to take you to task for disobeying my orders to fire upon Calais."
Captain Pine tried to explain.
"We didn't mean to disobey orders, sir, but the Americans are our friend. But every time we had a fire, we had to borrow their equipment to fight it with."
The Major was understanding. Then he thought of something else.
"The gunpowder, Captain. Since you've not used it, I'll send a detail here to transport it to the fort at Quebec."
"But it has been used, Major."
The captain's face turned as red as his tunic as he explained the mystery of the missing gunpowder. Captain Pine glanced out the window a moment before he continued.
"In the middle of the war, the 4th of July came along, and the Americans in Calais wanted to celebrate their Independence Day. But they had no... well, we gave them the gunpowder to make firecrackers."
This is Pat McGeehan in Hollywood, California, saying goodbye from my writer, Charles Crowder, and inviting you to listen again to another tale of
Strange Adventure.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with a case I call The Simple Slip. A well-to-do banker was murdered, and two suspects, a business associate named Waxman and a nephew, were detained for questioning. Waxman said he arrived in town after a late airplane flight and drove to the house through a driving rain. The nephew claimed Waxman burst into the house, ran to his uncle's study, and shot him. "I saw him holding the smoking gun myself," he claimed. "I asked to see the front hall, which was immaculate. I returned and selected the murderer, the nephew. In a moment, I'll explain why.
Okay, one last break here, and then we'll be right back.
In the case of the simple slip, the nephew said Waxman burst into the house and shot his uncle. Yet it had been raining heavily that night, and there was no mud or water in the hall. The nephew was lying. A simple but fatal slip.
Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
I also said earlier that there would be an episode of The Strange Dr. Weird. Well, here that is. It's from November the 14th of 1944. And it's about what happens when people go hunting for Shandor. It is a little crackly. I hope you don't mind that. Maybe it just proves that it's old. Maybe it just proves that the old transcription has been laying around in someone's attic too long. You ever see a 78 RPM record? These old transcriptions are on something kind of similar to that, and they do get scratched up.
Adam Hack presents The Strange Dr. Weird.
Good evening. Come in, won't you? Why, what's the matter? Surely you're not nervous. Perhaps a story might calm your nerves a little. This story is about a strange spell and a stranger magic. I call it The Summoning of Shandor.
In a moment, you and I will take a deep breath and step into the strange world of Dr. Weird. And while you brace yourself, I'd like to do right by my sponsor and say something nice about Adam Hack. That's not very hard to do, especially right now with the breathtaking fall and winter line of up-to-the-minute Adam hats now on display in the thousands of Adam stores and authorized dealers from coast to coast. Why not stroll by your nearest Adam shop and take a quick look at some of that quality headgear? Believe me, when you buy an Adam, you're buying real quality and correct style, as well as perfect fit. An Adam is one of America's greatest hat values. Now, here's Dr. Weird.
My story, The Summoning of Shandor, begins in a curious circular room at the top of a deserted lighthouse near San Francisco. There are three men in the room. One is bound tightly to a chair, his face wet with the perspiration of agony. The second is small and ferret-like. The third man is squat, with a soft, pulpy body and blubbery countenance that makes him look like a frog as he speaks.
Well, Compton, are you ready to tell us where your wife is yet?
You'll never find her, Fenton. She's out of your reach.
Let me put another splinter under his fingernail, Frog. No. That ought to make him tell us where he's got her head.
Now, Spock, I've got a better idea. Yeah. Have you ever heard of Shandor?
That old Hindu who lives down in Chinatown? Yeah, I heard plenty about him. I don't want nothing to do with that guy.
They tell me one little trick of his called the summoning. It's supposed to make anybody you want come to you, even from the furthest end of the earth.
You mean he can bring her here even if we don't...
Yes, Spock. Suppose you go get this Shandor. We'll have him work his spell. And no matter where Compton has his wife hidden, she'll come to us, whether she wants to or not.
So, half an hour later, the door of a tiny, strangely furnished room, deep in the heart of Chinatown, slowly opened.
Yes. What is it, please?
Shandor?
I am called by that name.
My boss has got a job for you. He wants you to work him a spell. The one called the summoning.
The summoning?
Yeah.
That is a powerful and dangerous charm not to be lightly attempted. And yet it has been ordained for 1,000 years that I shall go with you and do as you wish. A few minutes later, Shandor, followed by Spot, was climbing the endless steps that led to the top of the deserted lighthouse, where Frog Fenton and his prisoner were waiting.
Fenton, this is madness. This obsession of yours about Ellen, my wife.
Yes, obsession. For 5 long years, I've waited for this moment. The moment when Ellen will come to me. Come to me and tell me she's willing to be mine. Unless she does that, you'll die tonight. Painfully. Slowly.
That's madness, Fenton. Just because you asked her to marry you once and she turned you down.
She'd have been mine if you hadn't come along.
No. No, she wouldn't. She was just sorry for you because you...
Because I love the way I do. Like a frog. Yes. I know. She said it made her skin crawl just to have me touch her hand. You think I could forgive that? I went to prison because I was caught stealing money to have my face changed so she liked me. I told her that. She told you and you told the police. You expect me to forgive that?
Fenton, listen to me. Forget this crazy idea of revenge. Turn me loose.
I've told you the price of your life. For your wife, Ellen, to come to me gladly. Kiss me. Me, whose very touch made her skin crawl. If she won't do that, you'll die. Now, for the last time, where is she?
She's where you can never find her.
Never.
You fool!
Yes. Thompson. You're unconscious. So, you think you can keep her hidden from me, do you?
Spot,
it's you.
Yeah. Go on in, Shandor.
I obey.
You know what you're here to do?
This man has told me.
Good. We have a friend, a young woman. She's lost, and we can't find her. We want to bring her here. You'll be well paid.
I do not use my knowledge for pay. Have you a picture of the one who is to be summoned?
Yes, yes, here.
Yes, she is young and fair.
Now, get busy and get her here. And if your spells don't work, I'll throw you out that window down to the rocks below. Understand?
Shandor has no fear of you. First, the incense must be lighted.
That's strong stuff.
Shut up, Spot. Go down below and wait there.
Okay. Suits me. First.
First, you must call the one who is wanted and ask her to come.
All right. Ellen. Ellen. Come to me.
Ellen, come. Ellen, come. Ellen, come. Ellen, come.
We'll learn what happens in just a moment. First, I wonder if we could have a word with you, Dr. Weird.
Yes, yes, young man. What is it?
Well, your program really scares me tonight, Doctor. I want you to give me something for my frenzied nerves. Just a... Say, what's that thing you're carrying around?
This? Yes, the human skull.
A skull, huh? Now, look, Doc, never mind about my nerves. Just go away for a minute and we'll all think about something nice. Gentlemen, I hope the next time you stroll by your nearest Adam Hat store, you'll find time to step inside for a brief look around. Believe me, that fall and winter line of hats just arrived really represents a fine assortment of quality. Prices, you'll notice, run from only $3.45 up to $10. Buy your size in a famous Adam 5, one of America's greatest hat values, which features the most correct, up-to-the-minute styles in genuine fur felt. Men choose Adam because an Adam just naturally does something for a fellow. The ladies certainly agree with that. That's why so many ladies are giving their men Adam hat gift certificates for Christmas. That way, he makes his own selection of size, color, shape at any time he pleases, just by presenting the gift certificate at any one of the thousands of Adam hat shops and authorized dealers from coast to coast. This Christmas, madam, give him an Adam. Now, Dr. Weir.
Now for the rest of my story, the summoning of Shandor. In the tiny room at the top of the deserted lighthouse, the magician Shandor sounds the gong which summons the missing from wherever they may be.
Ellen, come. Ellen, come. Ellen, come. She comes.
She is almost here.
Well, that gong. What is it?
So you come too. It's a Shandor Thompson. And he's been summoning your wife. Ellen is coming. She's almost here.
No. Well, that's not possible. It mustn't be.
But it is. She's almost here now.
No.
Be not distressed, my friend. She comes gladly.
But she...
It is best that you neither see nor hear what is to happen. Look into my eyes. There. Now there is a veil over your senses.
Listen. I hear footsteps.
She is here. She whom you have summoned has come to you dressed in white and veiled as a bride.
Ellen, you come.
You called me and I came.
Yes. I've been waiting 5 years for this moment, Ellen.
I've come. I was glad to come.
Let me lift this veil you're wearing so I can see you. Your face, your eyes, your hair.
I will lift it. Then.
No!
Now, take me in your arms.
No, your face, it...
You summoned me. You cannot turn from me now.
No! Stay away from me! I'll shoot you! I'll kill you!
You summoned me. I shall remain with you as long as you live.
You're still coming toward me. Where is all about it? Hit you. Why aren't you dead?
You summoned me. We shall be together always now. Always.
No! No! Don't touch me! No!
He summoned me, and I came. Now I must go back. Go back.
Yes, you must return once more from whence you came.
It was a great distance, but I was glad to come. Tell my husband not to grieve. I was glad to come.
I will tell him.
I was glad, but now I must go back.
Now, my friend, you may awaken.
Oh, Shandor. What happened? Where's Fenn?
The frog, like one whose soul was evil, has gone. When your wife came to him and he saw her face, madness overtook him. He leaped to his death on the rock below.
Her face, it was horribly mutilated in the accident in which she was killed. She was buried in her wedding dress and veil.
She said she was glad to come.
But she couldn't have come. She's dead. She's been buried. For a year.
Well, do you feel calmer now? Quite a powerful spell, wasn't it? So powerful that it could even call the dead from the grave. Oh, you don't believe a word of it? I'm glad. You'll sleep better tonight. Or perhaps. Drop in on me again soon. I'm always home. Just look for the house on the other side of the cemetery. The house of Dr. Weir. Good night.
Join us next week at this same time for another visit with The Strange Dr. Weird. The Strange Dr. Weird, directed by Jock McGregor, is presented by the makers of Adam Hats, the hats that are always top in quality. This is Mutual.
Well, that's another fine night transmissions in the can. So, well, it's almost in the can. Before I go, I want to mention that you can write me, if you're so inclined, at nighttransmissions@gmail.com. I also want to mention that the website, www.nighttransmissions.com, is out there on the internet. And there's a good deal of ancillary material there. More details about the shows. And even the occasional link to go a little bit deeper into the history of the show. Some people actually think it's worth a visit. Well, I don't want to lie to you. Nobody's ever actually told me that. On second thought, why shouldn't I lie to you? I mean, everybody lies to us, huh? It's a wonderful place. Free pretzels and beer. Go, go. You'll like it there. Anyway, this is the end of what I like to call the dramatic presentation portion of Night Transmissions. So we'll spend the next few minutes just listening to some music. Usually there's no theme to the music, it's just stuff that I like and kind of hope you'll like. Anyway, take care of yourself. I'm Gary Clinton and you're whoever the hell you are.
Saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me sing a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, "Please adore me." And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Now I'm no longer alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
Gone forever. Wait until
summer comes again. I hope that you remember when our love had just begun. I loved you yesterday, and yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone.
After all the loves of my life, All the sweet green icing flowing down.